Hey, Soho House, good evening and welcome to this live edition of a podcast we do on WGN Radio called The Corner Store. Make some noise for yourselves for being live on this Saturday night. This is my incredible co-host, the journalist, the writer, the fashion maven, Tara Mahadevan.
Definitely tonight.
That's a bar. I know, definitely tonight. Make some noise for Tara, y'all. So this is a special occasion for us because this is we're a few months into a podcast that we do on WGN Radio with creatives from around the city and around the country. But this is the first time we've done it live, so it's we're going to figure some things out.
Yeah,
we have DJ Dami is in the building. Make some noise for your DJ one time.
Yo, you got 3M on your sleeves? Okay.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. Tara, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Did you have a good St. Patrick's Day?
What is that?
Okay. Did anyone celebrate St. Patrick's Day in the building?
Yeah.
Okay, you have a Guinness. That counts. Thank you. Thank you, man. Good. All right. Well, yeah. I didn't do anything for the holiday, but I was white today, as I am every day, and so I feel like that counts.
Sometimes you're less white. Maybe you're more white today.
I'm always pretty white, and my name's right. Kevin, so I feel like. Oh, and I'm drinking Irish whiskey.
But you're Jewish.
Yeah,
that's just saving grace.
Yeah, look, don't. We are at a social club, and I feel like if they
okay,
know
we're
that,
done.
They
we're
might,
done. I'm
okay,
done.
Okay, very
I'm
good.
Done.
So we have a great guest tonight, and I'm excited for a lot of reasons. One, I've known this young man since he was in a youth poetry festival we do in Chicago called Louder Than a Bomb. How many people have heard of Louder Than a Bomb in the building? Make some, I appreciate that. So, some of you politely raised your hand, and that's great. But we're in the music room at the Soho House. You can make some noise. The Louder Than a Bomb is the citywide youth poetry festival we do here. This young man was in the festival as a young writer, and what has been exciting, of course, over the last decade or so has been privy to his evolution. You know, he has gone from really ripping poetry stages all around the city to being, I think, one of the foremost comedians of a generation. He is, of course, one of the co-stars of the first season of an HBO show you might have heard of called Insecure. And the rumor is, I think that he is also working on his first half-hour special. I think that there might have been a deal that was just inked. Hopefully we'll be able to see that soon. Without further ado, Chicago's own, y'all. Let's make some noise for Langston Kerman.
Wait, let's go, let's go, let's go.
Nice. The first live one's going well.
Yeah, so far so good.
I always have to remind him to use that app, and he never does.
that's what I do with my free time. I find rap horn apps.
Nice.
It's
download.
Called rap horn.
App.
Oh.
I think.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. So Langston, man, welcome to the Corner Store, and welcome back to the city of Chicago.
Thank y'all for having me. This is so dope. Thank you for being here, everybody. This is very dope.
Before we start. We call it the Corner Store for a lot of reasons, but we do have some gifts for you. Before you, we always give our gifts, y'all, some treats that if they wish they could share with Tara and I or DJ Dami or the audience perhaps. And because we are at the Soho House, I thought that it wouldn't be appropriate just to go to any regular ass Corner Store. So I went to Whole Foods to get these like very precious snacks. I hope you're into them. We have for you some organic seaweed wasabi snacks.
Come on now.
You know what I'm saying? I don't
know if
you,
I'm into that.
Course, yeah, you live in LA now.
I live in LA.
Yeah, exactly.
This is my whole diet. This is great.
Exactly. Yeah. You
so slim. Hungry.
Yeah,
this is fantastic.
You look much slimmer than I last saw you. We also have some organic mango ethically sourced from Africa farmer. That sounds racist. But there's some mango slices for you.
As long as they're from all of Africa.
Yeah. Right.
I don't want a specific part of it to be involved.
And then also a cold pressed organic ginger limeade.
I feel like you should have just gone to a regular Corner Store.
I know. I really should have. Yeah. Kind of play. But look,
you
man, you
some country girls.
Right?
Crunchy curls.
I know. Should have been appropriate. But yo, man, you know, and please indulge if you wish. Or you know, save for your room later.
I'm going to save.
Okay, that's fair.
I don't want
You don't want a mouthful of food
on the mic?
I don't want
these people getting jealous. You know what I mean?
I know. There really is not enough for the whole audience. But it is a lovely audience tonight at the Soho House. And, and man, so you are, you're from these parts.
I am. Yeah. Oak Park, Illinois. What up, what up, what up? Yeah. I'm from here, I guess. Yeah. And then it's always a weird thing to be like, yeah, I'm from Chicago. And people are like, where? Well, not really, but
Oak Park. Yeah, actually.
I think that's close enough.
It's close. Yeah. We kind of count.
It's the westernmost place you could possibly
be. It's as close to Chicago as you can get on the west side before you're west side for real.
But that is the interesting thing about Oak Park, right? Is that it, I mean, because even at the high school that you went to, Oak Park River Forest High School, there are you know, students who come from both sides of Austin.
Yeah,
and that school itself and that community has that kind of bifurcated experience of being in and around the Chicagoland area. So, as a young person, what was it like growing up, perhaps in Oak Park, but so close to the west side of Chicago?
I think, and I'm sure everybody sort of has this experience, but Chicago's probably the most segregated city I've ever lived in. Right, like this city is crazy segregated
as far as diverse.
Yeah.
Yes.
In terms of like the amount of people that we have that could be mixing together that aren't.
The city insurers. They're like, fuck.
Most segregated, most diverse.
Yeah. So it was a weird experience because Oak Park isn't like that. Like we have like a pretty, I mean, granted, it's still mostly white, thank God. But
am I white? Anyway. Yeah.
You know, part of it is like a pretty substantial mix of all the things that represent Chicago. So I grew up in a world where like everybody's kind of mixing together and getting to know each other. And then you cross over Austin and you're like, okay, well, the rest of Chicago's all black until I get to a certain part. Then it turns Mexican somehow and then turns into a bunch of drunk white people. And then we kind of get back together downtown, but not really. It's a weird thing.
Did you not leave Oak Park then? Often?
For what? It's a beautiful place.
Okay.
All those Frank Lloyd Wright homes? What am I leaving for?
Well, what did your folks do coming up? And who are you raised with, I guess?
My mom is a former high school teacher. She taught in, you know, CPS for 16 years, I think, before she sort of moved on to higher ed. And then my dad is a computer technician by day and a practicing socialist by night. And so he writes. Yeah, I'm real cool. He writes for a socialist newspaper at night, and that's like sort of his thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
Has it been that way for a while?
It's been that way as long as I've known him. He left college. He was going to Yale and left early so that he could go like learn about socialism and ruin the world probably. But no, you know,
or there are other it. There's different
there are other theories. I don't
one.
Know.
So what was that like growing up in a house where you had people committed to various kinds of education? I mean, were they trying to encourage you to be disciplined as a student, or what was that environment like?
Yeah, I think obviously their education was like the big thing, right? So you work really hard to be focused on whatever the books are, whatever. But I was lucky that I had two parents who kind of like broke rules. Like my mom is a black lady from Detroit who married this Jewish dude who like spent his whole like basically everything on socialism. And then my dad is the black sheep of his family. So when I'm like, oh, I want to write poetry and do comedy, they're like, they can't be like, no.
Right.
You know what I mean? What are you going to tell me? Like, I'm going to go tell jokes. I'm going to talk about my penis in front of strangers. That's
sure, they were really excited about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so how quickly did you come into writing? Like when you were young, when did you begin to first pick up a pen?
I thought I was going to be a ball player. and I stopped growing.
Hooper?
Yeah,
Are you nice?
Are you nice?
Come on, Kevin, don't do me like that.
No, I'm just asking.
Don't do me like that.
Wait, I don't really. I feel like I must.
See, he's trying to embarrass
me.
But
he asks every person that.
All you nice drunk
you.
People, and that's not right. I was pretty okay.
You're pretty okay, yeah. No, I do. You're all right.
I was decent, but I had my limitations.
Sure,
he
of course.
He always asks if they're nice.
Yeah. I'm very interested in this
subject. If you say the word basketball, he'll ask you if you're nice.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm not nice enough to brag about it on microphone.
This guy.
Yeah. I will not brag about it. I will talk about it, though.
Yeah.
Can we brag about it?
I'm not. No, I don't have a game that's worth bragging about, but I will.
But you played in Wales.
I know, which, exactly, Wales being the operative term. Yeah.
You know, the best place for basketball.
Yeah, you know. So you were going to be a ball player.
In my mind, for
right?
sure. Uh-huh. I don't want you to even for a second think that that was a recruiting thing that was happening anywhere else. But, yeah, I thought for a while I was going to play basketball. And then that my junior year of high school, I got cut. And then that's how I found poetry. Because I needed something to do with, like, my free time after school. And Peter Kahn, who is a teacher at Oak
Salutes
Park River
to
Forest,
Peter Kahn.
Is the greatest man I've ever known. Taught me a bunch of shit about poetry and let me be a part of LTAB. And that's how I got involved in YCA World and Louder Than a Bomb. And then,
so just to set that up a little, you know, for folks who don't know, you know, Oak Park River Forest operates the largest youth spoken word after school club in the nation.
Really?
They get 60 to 80 to 100 people in the club after school on a weekly basis to hang out and write poetry on, like, the nerdiest of shit on the planet. Do you know what I mean?
He now has a cutoff. He has to turn kids away.
What's the cutoff?
Because there's not enough room in the building for us to, like, in the room that he can teach in to have everybody that
the
wants
club
to be
is
a part
so
of
popping.
It.
But
like
what's
popping.
The cutoff, though?
What, like 60 to 80
I think
kids.
It's like
that's
70
a lot.
Or something like that.
It's
yeah.
still a lot.
In a poetry club after school. So, but when you came to that club, when you got involved in that, were you writing prior to that, or that was your first experience to a creative field?
I was writing like shit for girls, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, listen, talk about it.
You try to put on, yeah, we've all done this. I'm not the only one. Ladies and gentlemen, we've all tried to flirt with somebody and wrote something terrible as a way of solving that problem. I was like writing girls' poetry and shit, but I never took it seriously.
Do you remember any of those?
Of course not.
Okay.
And if I did,
you wouldn't.
I'd kill myself on this stage in front of these people.
It'd be a different show.
It'd be a very different show.
Yeah.
What a weird turn for your first live podcast.
Damn. It ended quickly.
It was fun, and then Kevin made him murder himself.
So you started writing in that space.
Yeah, I think we all sort of come into, like many art forms, I think we all come in from a very specific angle, and then it blossoms when you discover other things that are sort of happening. And so with YCA, with all these other things, I got to see people like you and, you know, Avery R. Young and like all these other very talented artists in Chicago who were doing something that I at the time didn't even know existed. Dan Sullivan, like all kinds of crazy, interesting performers, and that brought me into wanting to be a part of that. You know what I mean? And the next year, my senior year of high school, I made the basketball team, but then like bailed on it because I wanted to write poetry.
Wow!
And,
but I also was going to sit
you're
on
not
the bench.
Nice.
Yeah, like I wasn't going to keep it going for very long. So it's like, all right, I'm going to go write poems.
Well, I think I remember that senior year, and you had an incredible poem about being mixed, and I think there was a central metaphor about a particular fruit.
That's right.
But that poem was also funny.
Yeah.
Wait. What fruit?
A peach.
Oh, okay.
I had a kid at school when I was very young tell me my skin was the color of a peach, and I wrote a poem about it.
Do you remember any of it?
I do, but I'm not going to recite it. But it was a cool thing that like sort of got me pretty far in that competition, and now I look back on it and it's like I see the poems that these kids are writing this year, and it's like, all right, I'd fucking be embarrassed to even compete on the same level as them. These kids are amazing now, but like it was a really cool thing to be doing at the time.
Well, no, I think you were great at that time. Even I is that one of the first spaces where you had the intimation that you were also funny?
Maybe. I think what entices so many of us about the stage, and maybe this is true about like performance poetry as much as it is about comedy, I like to be able to manipulate you guys. That's my greatest intention, is like the idea of being in charge of this room. Even now, some of my jokes aren't going to work as well as I want them to, but you're quiet and you're attentive and you're in it. And that feels like a powerful, gross Lex Luthor thing that's happening in my head and my body. And I think that that's what's fascinating. So it wasn't always just about being funny, as it was about being almost in charge. Like, it's that that's really, like, fascinating and almost that's the adrenaline rush that doesn't exist in any other space.
Yeah. Well, what are the differences and similarities between poetry and comedy?
I mean, it's all narrative, right? It's all coming from something personal that I'm then, like, creating metaphors for, connecting dots with. I think my poetry was mostly sad with an occasional thing that an adult would laugh at that nobody else was.
Which is sad in itself.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm writing my feelings and
right,
adults
and
are like.
I'm cracking up in the back. I'm like, this kid.
What a sad kid.
Scary sight.
But no, I think it's similar in that it is just, it's just talking about you, mm-hmm. and where you exist and how you identify things in the world. And then there's choices being made. Do I want you to cry or do I want you to laugh? And how long do I want you to laugh? And how frequently do I want you to laugh? And that's stand-up versus poetry.
But you told me that you got an MFA in poetry.
I did. I kept making bad choices. Right.
So yeah, when is the shift from poetry to comedy?
I think at one point I started to realize that when you're doing poetry, there is a need to stay in a feeling that you, if I write down a poem today, if I write down a poem about my dad today, and I decide that I'm going to perform this poem over and over again, I have to stay in that feeling about my dad. I have to always be thinking about that feeling that my dad gave me when I wrote that poem, and I have to replicate that in front of the people that want to see that poem performed, right? With comedy, I don't have to do that. There's almost a, in my, for me personally, there's a freer thing happening where if I am angry at something, I can be angry for 5 minutes and then be like, I don't really fucking care. And people can go along with that. And I can talk about what that feeling is and like identify new feelings that are coming along as I'm growing as a person. So I think some of that was just me not advancing far enough as like a writer to learn how to do that in poetry, but I found that in comedy, and that became sort of the best way to make it move. You know what I mean?
And you were in New York when you started to begin to, because you got your MFA where?
In Boston University.
And did you start to go out to the clubs there? Did you start to go to New York?
I started here.
Okay.
For the year that I moved back from undergrad, and then I moved to Boston, and I kept doing it while I was teaching. I taught high school for a few years, and I did it simultaneously, and then I moved to New York and cut back on the teaching, but I kept doing the comedy, and now I'm in LA, and I don't know what else I would do with myself. So that's that.
So starting out that open mic life as a comic is not necessarily for the faint of heart.
No, it's miserable.
Right.
It's worse than what's happening right now. You guys seem so nervous, like you're expecting something different. We're just going to talk. And sometimes it's going to be funny, and sometimes it's going to be like really like thoughtful and shit. These guys are great. Stop being weird. Fucking idiots? No, I'm kidding. I didn't mean that. I didn't mean what I said.
You need your app. Where's your app?
Oh, yeah, right. I know. And a sad horn, maybe, actually, for that.
No, but the open mics are like the hardest, most taxing thing. And it's the opposite of poetry open mics. Maybe that's a good way to enter it. But like, it's poetry open mics are nothing but support. It's nothing but like, yes, if you're in the middle of a poem, if somebody comes up here and they decide they want to read a poem, people will literally cheer if you forget the words. They will stand to their feet and give you an ovation to remind you that you are important and these words need to be shared. And then if I wrote down a joke and I think it's the funniest thing in the world and y'all don't, I just ate my dick and you feel all the confidence to tell me that. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
I like that. That's also the hip hop app.
Yeah, right.
Rap sounds.
Exactly.
That's not a rap sound. Nobody plays
that's
that.
That's a sad vaudeville, like dead
right.
juice sound.
It's like a sad clown.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you started to get some play on that scene eventually, yeah. Right?
Right.
Yeah. What is the trajectory of you starting to get a little bit of love in that community, and what's the next step for somebody who's just starting out in that open mic scene to then begin to think that they could do it for real?
Yeah. I mean, I think all of it is just getting funnier. Like getting, and that sounds like a dumb answer, but it legit is the answer. Like, it's just, you start off and you're really bad at this thing, and then you stop being as bad, and then you start to get noticed by like clubs, and then clubs invite you to come and perform as like a host, and it sucks to be the host of a comedy show, but then they elevate you to the feature, and then that's less sad, and then eventually you get like a 5-minute spot on TV. And I was lucky that like 3 years ago I did like a spot on Comedy Central.
Yo, that one was funny.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Adam Devine's house party, it aired at like 12 a.m. on a Thursday, and then never again. But like, that was,
it's on the internet.
It's on the internet. Thank God for
so always, always.
Right. But you know, you start in these little spaces and then more things get provided. And I was very lucky to get cast in Insecure, and that helped elevate some of the at least attendees to come hear me talk and do my thing. And the Comedy Central half hour, we actually shot it already, so it's okay.
It's already
no,
all right. Yeah,
no, you're fine.
We can talk about it.
It already exists. It's going to be out in July, so okay. That'll be a all thing.
Right. And yeah, you can just definitely make some noise for
yeah.
that.
So I don't know that there's like an easy answer to any of it other than just write a new 5 minutes every time you need that new 5 minutes, and like, keep getting better and stronger at the thing. You know what I mean?
I mean, was acting part of, you know, what you wanted to do? Were you looking to do that?
Yeah, I think so. No shade to Insecure. It's the best. I love it very much.
You guys are familiar with that program, yeah. right? You guys have heard of that program?
But I don't.
Some of you. The white people are like, I refuse. I cannot. There's too much.
What do you mean, girls?
Right, yeah.
Damn, yeah, we know girls.
We have not seen them on that show. Brooklyn is all white.
Yo.
Yeah, I think acting was obvious. After a while, you realize that like comedy pays the bills, kind of, but it ain't really going to pay the bills. So you do other things to subsidize the income. But acting wasn't like comedy. Stand up is my baby. That's the thing, right? And then, huh? Okay.
Soon enough, yeah. Langston is gonna do a set in just a few minutes.
Yeah. That's such a weird request, sir. Let's hear it. Do it. We don't want to hear you talk.
But we do.
I know, right?
No more socially. Just your prepared work.
We'll get there certainly to your stand up, but I do want to ask about that process of writing, of building from 5 minutes to 10 minutes half hour, because that is, I mean, that is the rigor of being a comedian, is also the discipline of being a writer.
Yeah, I think all of it is the same thing. And I think that was the beautiful thing that poetry, the MFA, all these things prepared me for. It's like, oh, like we only have a limited amount of experiences, right? Like, you only have so many things that you've literally gone through and seen and done in the world, right? And then at some point you draw on those experiences and you decide to write a poem about it, or I decide to write a joke about that experience. But what you find is, after I've written that experience, I haven't tapped into everything that experience was. I've only written about what I thought was meaningful or interesting or funny in one moment. And the more that I can draw on those experiences and talk about other things, the more I'm in a world of like creating and developing and adding to the time that I have. So you start off with 5 minutes about your penis, and you find out that, wow, my penis does a lot more than I thought it did. There's a whole lot more penis to talk about. And you keep talking about it until you have 20 minutes of penis material. Kevin, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
My G, you like talking about your penis a lot. You've written for the Oscars.
I did.
Yeah. And how?
Well, I wrote for Chris Rock for the Oscars.
Okay. Oh, dope.
Yeah. The Oscars has their own like writing staff, so I always have to like qualify it because they do.
Okay.
It's like a different world almost, but yeah.
But what's that phone call like when you're like, yo, I want you to come into Spaceship and help me, Chris Rock.
He didn't call me.
Okay.
Did you meet him?
Someone else called me and probably emailed me or emailed my agents, and they called me and told me like that was the thing. But the beautiful thing was, I actually, he came down to a comedy club or a bar show, really, but he came down to see me.
Oh,
and specifically that night to see me, and like I did fine, and he liked it, and like was like, all right, come on. And that was the dopest part. And it wasn't a, all right, come on in person. But like 3 months later, he was like, yeah, I'm doing this. Come on. You can.
Is it different writing for him than you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's better at comedy than I
am. Right.
He's very good.
Yeah, yeah,
he's you are very good too.
He
has more experience.
Yeah, he's almost 40 years into this thing. And he is, the Oscars were, it was a great experience and like I'm really grateful for it. But what you end up finding is that so much of it is just trying to feed a beast that's already doing its thing. Mm. Like Chris wrote 90% of the Oscars that you saw that year. We gave him a bunch of tags and extra ideas that maybe he might play with as he was doing his own writing. So there were 15 of us in a room going, hey, Mr. Rock, what about this? And him being like, shut up, stupid. And you're like, sure enough.
So he was in the meeting?
Yeah. He ran the room and it's very intimidating. It's a weird thing to be nervous for 7 hours a day. But he's a nice dude. He's great at what he does, and it ended up showing, you know what I mean? So we were happy with it.
Who are some of your influences in terms of writing, comedy or otherwise?
Yeah, Chappelle's my that's my number one. That's the guy, and I know, you know, yeah. Tepid response, good. For the greatest ever do our art form. It's funny because he's gotten so much pushback this year from the things that he's talked about. And and maybe this is going to alienate me before I even do my comedy, I actually felt it was the most inspiring thing that he could have done. Like, he took on these really heavy subjects in a way that was really honest for a 45-year-old man in a world that isn't about, at this point, I think what we're conflating is whether or not comedians are supposed to be heroes or right. And I don't think that's what he wants to be. I think he just wants to be funny. And I think that there are parts of that that make him wrong and abrasive and uncomfortable and inappropriate and all the things that we've sort of elevated to a art space that shouldn't be there. Like, he should be able to say something that's honest without it turning into something violent, because he's not being malicious, he's just being honest. And in the same way that I would expect that from a different person in a different space, where I'm like, all right, I don't agree with that, but yeah, do your thing, finish the thought.
Yeah.
Let's see if it's funny or interesting or whatever.
Yeah.
So, Chappelle really, like, this year especially was like, fuck yeah, dude, do your thing.
Plus, he's really swole.
Yeah. Well, I don't like that as much. I don't know how y'all feel,
like,
but I like the skinny.
Yeah,
like,
I prefer that.
Like,
that's funnier.
Weird, it was funnier.
Funnier
yeah, it was yeah. funnier. Yeah. Now he's like more kind endearing. Of like intimidating, and I don't
I
like it.
He
it's
could,
like,
he
laugh
could
this
beat
joke,
you up?
Nigga. And right. it's like, ugh. I don't like how that feels.
He could beat you up.
Right.
Yeah.
I liked you when you were gangly. Why are you like this now?
Other writers or other socialists that have influenced you?
Man, you know who the first like literary poet that I really like was into was Lee Young Lee.
Yeah.
That was like the first Rose was like the first book that I ever like bought and like was super into it, and Persimmon was like the poem that brought me into thinking, oh, I was gonna write a book and change the world and do the thing, and then I realized how much money poets make and I was like, I'm good.
I'm good. Yeah.
But no, I think Lee Young Lee was really great. I had the super dope opportunity to work under Louise Glick when I was in my MFA, and she's brilliant and very kind and doesn't have a cell phone, so you have to call her house to be able to communicate with her. She doesn't have a cell phone, she doesn't have an email address, and so she's a very famous poet, like a poet, former poet laureate, and so you would have to call her home and she wouldn't pick up on the first call just to assert dominance, and so you would call and she wouldn't pick up, and then she would call you back, and then before saying hello would say exactly what she expects of you and then hang up, and you just had to deal with that and then get it done and show it back to her when you saw her
what?
In person.
She's like a Zen master.
I feel
master.
Like you need to employ that method.
I should, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you should. Yeah, it definitely. Makes your life a lot easier.
Yeah, you can just throw your phone away. Out the window.
Cool.
What are you listening to? That's what I want to
know. Oh, I listen to a lot of, I'm not going to call it weird. I listen to a lot of Hall & Oates. I listen. What was I listening to on the way here? That I don't know how to pronounce his name, so forgive me. But Khalid. Yeah, Khalid. That his album's great. It's about teenagers, which makes me a little uncomfortable. But everything else about it is like it's just a good ass album. That Black Panther soundtrack is fire as shit.
Yeah,
that was really exciting. I'm all over the place. I like to play and dabble in whatever. And, you know, see where... the Big Little Lies soundtrack is really tight. I don't know if y'all listen to that, but that's fire as fuck. I don't know.
Word. Where can people find you on the Interconnected Network?
Everything is just at Langston Kerman. Like Instagram, Twitter, my email... email, I don't know. My website is LangstonKerman.com. Nobody else has my name, so it's like... The domain name I always check, and they're like, "Yeah, that's fine. No one wanted it, bro."
Cool. Well, yo, we're gonna let Langston do his thing. Let's make some noise for Langston one time, y'all. So what we're gonna do? We're gonna turn it over to you.
Yeah.
This has been the interview portion. All of this is going to be heard not only live and direct here in this room at the Soho House, but also every Tuesday on WGN Radio. We release the podcast called The Corner Store. It's at Shy Corner Store on all the social networks.
Yes, but it's on iTunes.
It is on iTunes.
Yes.
It's also on SoundCloud.
Yes.
And maybe soon other places.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. All right. But y'all, without further ado, one time, let's make some noise for Langston Kerman.
Hey. One more time for these guys, please. Appreciate you, bro. Yeah. Hey, hi. Hey, you guys okay? This is going to be a weird shift in energy, and I just hope we can do it together. This is like, it will be okay, I think. It's nice to be back in Chicago. We were talking about Oak Park. Are you from Oak Park? You're from River Forest, so OPRF. That's so dope. You know, Oak Park, we were talking about like the diversity of the whole thing, right? And it's such a diverse place. This is how diverse, this is how beautiful where we went to school is. The most famous person, the most famous alumni who ever went to Oak Park, River Forest, is Ernest Hemingway. Right? That's dope. Ernest Hemingway went to our high school. Different year, but he went to our high school. All the same. Now, diversity. We're talking about diversity. The second most famous alumni who ever went to our high school is, no, that girl who R. Kelly peed on. You see the range? That's a pretty big bell curve of diversity. No, one of them is probably the most important writer in all of American history, and then the other person got peed on in the face. By another pretty good writer. R. Kelly had hits. He did. He wrote two different versions of a song called Feeling on Your Booty. Two equally successful versions. You understand? That means he wrote Feeling on Your Booty. He recorded it. He listened back to it and he thought to himself, I don't know. I don't know if I've said everything I need to say on this subject. I think I'll take another crack at it. Did I mean crack like butt crack? Of course I did. Of course I did. My R. Kelly, I'm a sick man. Fucking disgusting. You should have locked me up years ago, but I wrote the soundtrack for Space Jam. So I'm free, motherfucker. Free to do my thing. It's dope, man. I live in LA now. I've been traveling a lot. Been on the road quite a bit. I spent like a month this year living in Canada. I was like living and like existing in Canada, and it's just better than here. Like, it's just better than America. You know what I mean? I don't know how many of you have spent time. It's dope. It's just so many progressive, interesting things. I saw a white woman washing windows. Do you know what I mean? Do you understand how exciting that was for me? I was just walking past like, oh shit, y'all do that? I didn't know you had those muscles. It blew my mind. A part of me wanted to run up to her and be like, psst, hey, white girl, yous can be free. You can be free, white girl. You ain't got to live like this no more. In America, there are vintage furniture stores as far as the eye can see. You can bring your dog inside of restaurants. Just ruin people's meal with privilege and pet dander. Listen, white girl, listen to me. Free yourself. Free yourself. Find the North Star and then walk backwards to freedom. Get on that above ground railroad. It's just a regular train. It's a reasonably priced train. I just want a white slave so bad. I do. Ooh, I want one of y'all. Ooh, I just want one of y'all. Ooh, just cleaning my sneakers. You know what I mean? And you'd be like, ooh, do you know who my father is? And I'd be like, no, I don't know who your father is. That's why you're a slave. We erased that part of your history. I make you sing slave hymnals and shit. Just like, wade in the water. Wade in the water, Karen. Wade in the water. Karen gon' send back the water. This isn't Pellegrino water. She specifically asked for Pellegrino water. I just be having fun. I don't know, man. It's dope that y'all came out and we get to do this together. This is like a fun thing that we get to like. I get to tell you jokes and you get to laugh and hopefully we have fun. It's a tense time in the country, right? I think we all feel that. It's very tense right now. Just, ugh. Like, white people started shaking my hand real weird. You know what I mean? It's a lot more thumb than it used to be. You know what's shitty about right now? And this is true. This is something I genuinely... You know, it sucks that we all feel like we have to be political. That, like, we all have to have an opinion on politics. And that never existed before. Like, there were times where you could just walk away from politics and not be involved. And that doesn't... Like, you have to have an opinion. I have to have an opinion. All three of the Baja men have to have an opinion. All three? Not just the leader, not just Steve Baja, all three. They all have to be. I don't want the Baja men's opinion. I don't want who let the dogs out? And what senator do we call to get these dogs back in? This is a bipartisan issue. Dogs are loose. I don't know, man. We don't all deserve an opinion on pop. We don't. Look, this is true. I spend most of my day today watching a marathon of Say Yes to the Dress Atlanta. Do y'all know that show? Are you a fan? It's a great show. For some of you didn't, if you don't know the show, it's very simple. It's a reality show where women try on wedding dresses. It's a whole thing, right? It's just these, it's in Atlanta, so these frumpy southern women, they go in. They go into this wedding store and they wipe the Frito pie off of their faces, just the crust out of the corners of their mouth, and then they try on wedding gowns in front of a gay man named Monty. That's the whole show. It's just women going, ooh, Monty, ooh, 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 I don't know. Ooh, Monty, ooh, ooh, I don't know. I can't wear sheer. I won't get into heaven. That's the devil's fabric, Monty. You ain't got no good Christian burlap. They say that, and then Monty always says some real funny gay shit back. You know what I mean? Like, real funny gay shit. Like, they'll be like, ew, Monty, I won't get into heaven. And then Monty's like, heaven? Heaven? Honey, I'm trying to get you in a size 8. And you just laugh. You laugh because it's true. She should go up a size. I watched that for 3 hours today. 3 hours of Say Yes to the Dress Atlanta. At one point in the marathon, this is true, at one point this woman, it was on one of the episodes, this woman decided she was going to pick out her own wedding dress, which if you watch the show, you know this is very taboo. This is a huge no-no. You understand? She is truly behaving like a Crip at a Bloods birthday party. It is unacceptable behavior. But she decided she was going to pick out her own dress. She wasn't going to listen to Monty. She was going to break all the rules. And when she tried on that dress, I said this out loud. I was by myself and this left my person. I said this out loud. She put on the dress and then to no one, I went, oh, honey, no. Honey, no. A pleated A-line? No. This is your wedding day, not the Sadie Hawkins dance. I said that out loud. And then I had to face myself. You know what I mean? I had to deal with the fact that they came out of me, and I didn't like how that felt. I don't want to become that person. My identity was in fucking turmoil. But then like 5 seconds later, Monty said the exact same thing. You understand, at the root of me, I'm a sassy bitch. That's who I am. I don't want to write fucking signs. I don't want to protest. I don't want the politics of today. I just want to watch Monty. That's who I want to write. That's who I want to invest in. You understand? I just want to watch Monty roll his eyes and say weird shit. Just like, ooh, someone call a doctor because these bustiers are giving me the vapors. Do you know what I mean? That's who I'm voting for. It's tense, man. It really is. And it's, you know, it's pushing us to extremes. That's where we're at. Everything is extreme, and we feel like we're being protective of things, so it's making us even more extreme than we would have been. Like, and I think we're all guilty. I'm guilty of it, too. I started thinking this recently, and I don't know how this part's going to go over, but here we go. I started thinking this. I don't think white people should be able to write history anymore. Does that make sense? And I appreciate the black section for clapping, but like, I want to be clear. I don't think you guys should legally be allowed to document history because you're not honest about history. And that's not me trying to take your voices away. I have no interest in taking your voices. Listen, seen the Goonies, big fan. You know what I mean? Like, write more Goonies. Y'all are dope at Goonies, but not history because you're not honest about what history is. At this point, with white, you guys are writing fan fiction, right? It's fan fiction for like your favorite murderers and criminals and shit. And that's fine. You have favorites. I have favorites. You know what I mean? Like, you like Andrew Jackson. I like O.J. Simpson, but that's preference. It's preference. Yes, absolutely. Andrew Jackson killed more people, but O.J., the quality, you know what I mean? Those were good murders. Those were exciting murders. Andrew Jackson didn't get a profile on TMZ. Those were good murders. I don't know, man. This is what my comedy's like, so. Very different than Insecure, I guess. I did that show, which that's so dope that so many of you are like into it or whatever. I'd have a sex scene in that show, which is super embarrassing. No. Mm-mm. You're wrong. You're real wrong about that. It didn't go over well for me at all. You work out a lot when you're like about to be naked on TV. That's what you think you're doing. Like, oh, I'm going to work out. I want to look good. I'm going to eat right. I'm going to take care of my body. I'm going to look good when I'm naked on TV. And then as soon as the sex scene aired, as soon as it went out on the television, I kept getting all these emails. Literally, people would tweet me and email me, and they'd be like, hey, man, I just want to say how much I appreciate you showing what a regular body looks like on TV. You know, just a regular unexercised body. No muscles, no definition, no. Brother, you inspire me. See, the mother guys, they were muscly. I wanted to fuck them, right? But you look like you could work at my post office. And I like that. You got a body built for stamps. I like it. It's fucked up, man, because I was trying my best. You know what I mean? I was trying my absolute hardest. I can't get mad. I can't write back like, hey, shut up. Hey, you have no idea how bad my regular body could be. These nipples could be way bigger. I got big nipples. Like two Magnum condoms strapped to my chest. I catch a wind, I'm floating away. Oh, no, man. I get a lot of weird messages now on the internet. A lot of people send me weird shit. I got this the other day, and based on your reaction to the first part of this bit, this is going to get real uncomfortable for all of us. But keep in mind, I didn't write this. Someone sent this to me. A dude emailed, he slid in my DMs, right? He slid on me. He was like, hey man, I just want to say, if you're ever in the Atlanta area, you should hit me up because I would happily pay you money so that I could sniff and lick your asshole. Right. Right. He said that to me. And my first thought was, what? You ain't willing to travel? But then... That's a big trip for me, Atlanta. I gotta go cross country for this? How do I even dress for that? What do you wear to a formal ass eating? They don't make tuxedos with the ass already cut out. I gotta get that tailored. He sent that message, man. But then like 5 seconds later, before I even had a chance to respond, he sent a second message immediately after, where he was like, hey man, just to be clear, this isn't a gay thing. It's strictly business. And so that we're clear, that's not a business. That's not how businesses work. You know what I mean? That's not the acronym doesn't go lesbian, gay, trans, corporate. You know what I mean? That's not how business. That's not how Microsoft got started. Bill Gates wouldn't just eat an ass in a garage and then handing out computer chips. He's trying to get in my head. He's fucking with, you know what I mean? As if I'd be sitting at home reading this and thinking to myself, well, I would never ever let any man do anything to my butt unless it was a solid business proposition. It's crazy.
How was Atlanta?
He said, so how was Atlanta? It's a lovely town. I really, we negotiated it. And it's a good place. I don't know, man. It is tense right now, and you got to just find shit that makes you happy, right? Find something in the world that just makes you feel good, be it art, be it a job. I found a person. I have a girlfriend, and she's very dope, and she makes me very happy. She's a nice lady. I feel like I finally met that special someone who makes me want to buy a second towel. You know what I mean? I only own one towel, but she makes me feel like shit. Let's get two or three of these things. Start a family. I want to introduce my towel to your mother. You know what I mean? We were in a long distance relationship for like 2 years. We just started living together, and that's been like a weird transition. Because is anybody doing long distance right now? Is anybody in the middle of a long distance thing? It's tough. It's hard. You know what it is? It's hard to make someone feel sexy from a distance. Because sex is present. It's now. It's right in front of you. There's nothing you can do to replicate it. I can't, like, be on the phone like, ha-ha, yeah, girl. I'm going to tear that ass up in 2 to 3 weeks' time. Woo, I hope you getting wet, girl. And then I hope you store that wet. Maybe put it in some Tupperware or on ice. I get to it. What am I going to do to you, girl? I said, what am I going to do to you? Well, first of all, I'm going to take a Greyhound bus. That's right. I'm going to ride that for about 6 to 8 hours, even though it should only take 3. Ooh, and the whole time I'm on that bus, girl, I said, the whole time I'm on that bus, I'm going to be sitting next to an old Asian man holding a live rooster. Why is a bird on that bus? It's hard to say, girl. Tell you this, that bird is not happy about it. And baby, sweetheart, little mama, baby girl, when I finally make it to you, when I finally make it to your crib, ha-ha, I'm probably going to be too tired to have sex with you. It has been a long day. You want to fall asleep watching prison shows? That's what I do. We live together now. We're in the same apartment, and that's interesting. We're getting to know each other, right? Like, so I'm working really hard. We've only lived together for 7 months. So I'm like working really hard to be protective of her space and her privacy. And she won't stop shitting in front of me. Anybody else? Constantly. And when I say shitting, I don't mean like occasionally pooping with the door open. That's not what I'm talking about. You understand? I'm saying waiting until I'm brushing my teeth. Just mouth agape. Ruining the taste. I haven't tasted spearmint in weeks. It's fucked. It is. It's fucked up, man, because I moved away from New York specifically to stop watching people's shit. That was my main motivation. I had had enough. I don't know. I saw the worst shits I ever saw in New York. The worst. I don't know why you wooed, but yeah. I don't know what's wooable about that the whole thing. This is the worst shit I ever saw. This is the worst thing I ever saw somebody. One time I saw somebody take a dump on the scaffold above a construction site. You understand? No, he had climbed up. You understand? He had taken a shit above a Chipotle. He had climbed to the top. I'll show you. He had climbed all the way to the top of this thing, and he had gone all the way up there, and he had perched himself like this. He had perched himself like a gargoyle. I'm going to get it. He had perched himself like a gargoyle. He had perched himself, and he was just scowling out across the city, just staring into the night. And then I saw him, and he saw me, and then we made eye contact, and then he said this out loud. He went, "Hey, hey, don't look at me. Look away. This is private. Chipotle's closed." And when that happened, I thought that was unreasonable. I said to myself, that's a crazy person. Shame on him. He shouldn't be doing that. But then like I really like what's in it. You shouldn't do that. But then like now I'm living with my girlfriend and I can't help but think at least he had the decency to ask me to leave. You know, at least he did that much, because now I'm living with a sociopath who wants to stare me directly in the eyes while she empties herself. You know what I mean? And it's always, she wants to talk. She wants to have real conversations. And it's never cute. It's never like, "Ooh, how was your day?" It's always, "Oh, do you think owning dogs is slavery?" And yes, I think it's slavery, but not right now. Wipe yourself, then we'll talk. Find some shit that makes you happy. I don't know. I went to my first strip club this year. That was exciting. Yeah. It's not worth clapping for. I'm 30. It's a weird thing to start at 30. You know what I mean? It's a weird age to start ruining your clothes with glitter. I'm not a strip club person. I'm not. There's no anime at the strip club. I've checked. I'm not even a porn person, really. I don't even really watch porn. I mostly masturbate to Sweet Nostalgia. That's me. I just get on Facebook like, hell yeah. Hell yeah. Family Vacation 2009, let's talk about it. I can never tell from the laughs in that joke if y'all think I'm jerking off to my own Family Vacation. You know what I mean? I'm just staring at my brother in a swimsuit like, "Look at you, Brian. Yeah, you were working out that summer. Look at you." I went to my friend forced me to go to the strip club with him. He's very adamant that we go together. And if we're talking about the patriarchy, that has to be something. Do you know what I mean? Like, that has to be a part of it. Men, I don't get it. Like, I don't understand the instinct that men have where we force each other to go look at naked. Like, what's the instinct there? You know what I mean? Like, hell yeah, dog. We going to the strip club tonight. No excuses. I want to see what your face looks like when your dick is hard. That's right. Put on your best sweatpants, playboy. We going out. We going to get good and erect. We going to make deep eye contact. And then I'm going to say something weird like, "I don't know, dog. Maybe I might be alone forever." Ooh, it's going to be fun. Just find some shit that makes you happy, man. This is a cool job I get to do. I'm very grateful that y'all came out and, you know, fucked with the podcast. And give it up one more time. Cornerstone. It's dope. I don't know. I used to be a high school teacher. I talked about it a little bit earlier. I taught high school, and I quit in the middle of the year. I didn't give a shit about those kids. I didn't care. I quit on a Wednesday. I didn't give a fuck. Fourth period, I was done. Kids were like, "Mr. Kerman, what's our homework for tomorrow?" I'm like, "I don't know, man. That sounds like a tomorrow lady question." "I ain't gonna be here. I'm not invested." Teaching's tough. Are there teachers here? Anybody working in education? You do? That's tight. What do you teach? Fifth grade. Oh, they're starting to turn. That's like where they're they're not as cute as they were like the year. I get it. I taught high school, 9th, 11th, and 12th grade English. I never been called Mr. and Bitch more in my life. Mr., why you a bitch? No, like I'm saying, like, why is that your personality? I don't know. You got some bitch-ass handwriting, mister. You must write with a feather. You write with a quill, mister? I could tell. You write with a quill. One time I had a kid call me Mr. Bitch, and that hurt more somehow. Mr. Bitch hurts. Here's why Mr. Bitch hurts more, and I think about it every day. Mr. Bitch hurts more because Mr. Bitch makes it seem like I earned the title. You know what I mean? Like I worked my way up. Like while the rest of you were lollygagging and playing around, I was focused on being the best bitch I could be. It's just a hard job, man. Teaching's tough. I had to pretend like drugs aren't cool. Do you know what I mean? I had to talk to like, kids, don't do drugs. Why would you do drugs? Nothing good. Listen, you'll just end up having sex with the prettiest girl in school. What, do you want to get your dick sucked at prom? Disgusting. Hey, you know what's better than dick sucking? You know what's better than that? Subject-verb agreement. Huh? Grammar rules. You got to finger bang your brain. Let's get wet up here where it counts. Get to the clitoris in your mind. Drugs are dope, man. If I can leave you tonight with anything, drugs are, they're great. They're pretty much the coolest things that have ever happened in the world happen because of drugs. Because someone was high on drugs. And that's just true. I say all of that, and I don't even do drugs. I don't do anything. I don't smoke weed. Heroin gives me tummy aches. I don't do anything. I have a very sensitive stomach to heroin. I got the allergy you always read about. I'm always at restaurants like, hey, I hate to be that guy, but is there any heroin in this Caesar salad? I can't take it. I'll get the shakes. I'll steal my mom's TV. I can't. Not again. I never did drugs. I was a dweeb, I guess. I don't know. Sometimes I feel like the only kid who fell for the D.A.R.E. campaign. You guys remember D.A.R.E.? They pay the kids to go on TV and be like, ew, gross marijuana. Ew, ew, that stuff's illegal. And then we were supposed to believe that kid had sex ever again. You know what I mean? Women don't have sex with snitches. I know that. I'm not like an expert on girls. I don't pretend to be, but I've never heard a girl say this out loud. Like, hey, you know what turns me on? A guy who calls the police for noise violations. Tuck in that t-shirt, daddy. Play that clarinet. Those D.A.R.E. commercials used to be weird. They had real weird. There was one I remember that where they had a talking dog. Y'all remember that one? This girl, if you don't remember, this girl gets super high on marijuana and her dog starts talking to her. And her dog starts saying some pretty real shit. Like in the grand scheme of he's being very upfront. He just basically says, look, ever since you started doing drugs, our relationship has changed. You're not the same person you used to be. I just wish we could go back to what we had. And I remember watching that commercial and thinking to myself, why is this dog talking like that? That's not dog talk. Do you know what I mean? Why is this dog talking like the deep voice dude in Boys to Men? Right? Just like, baby, come back to me now. We could be something, girl. I had a dog. If my dog could talk, she would just mostly be like, hey, hey, who's at the door? I love you. Who's at the door? You cooking? Who's at the door? All right, I'm going to go eat your roommate's tampons. I don't know why I do it. I just do it. I'm not a sophisticated animal. I certainly can't tell changes in your behavior. Who is at the door? The worst, I'm going to go after this. The worst is when they started targeting D.A.R.E. commercials specifically at black people. And that was the worst. They do the same thing with all of our commercials. It's not like a new idea. They add hip hop. That's our commercials. If y'all didn't know, it's the same commercial y'all get, but then there's a motherfucker breakdancing. Just like crack, hell no, dog, not no more. And it's so condescending and fucking, ugh. I hate, here's why. It's fucked up because it presumes that all black people are the same. That we're just this homogenous group that's easily enticed by hip hop, and we're not. We're as diverse as any of you. Like, look, one of my favorite things to do in the world, this is true, absolute favorite thing to do in the world, I like to get myself a medium cup of frozen yogurt, right? Medium, I'm not greedy. I get a medium cup of frozen yogurt, and then I like to go home, I sit at home, and I watch YouTube videos of people getting engaged. No, don't, oh, that's my shit. That's how I fucking party. You understand? I eat my yogurt. I watch these people fall in love. I have a nice cry. You know what I mean? I'll sit there, and then afterwards, I stand up, I look in the mirror, and I wipe, and I just go, yo, son, you a real ass nigga. And that's not in those commercials. You understand? Wipe your tears, dog. We good. Got a big day ahead of us. There used to be this one Black Dare commercial. This is meant to keep black people away from drugs, with this little girl, and she's reading like this like poem, this like hardcore spoken wordy poem in the streets of New York. She's walking around and she goes, this is Trey. This is crew. Here he is, what he do. Only listens, never plays, never think, never says what he wants or what he needs. Just sit right there and smoke that weed. I wonder if he'll ever leave. Word. As if a bunch of niggas was going to be sitting back like, hey, you know what? This little rhyming bitch is right. Maybe we should go to college. Feels like 100 years of systemic racism have been lifted off my shoulders. Thank you, little rhyming bitch. Thank you. It's fucked up, man. It is. You know why it's messed up? Because if you really listen to that poem, Trey's not bothering anybody. He's sitting on his own property smoking what is now a recreational drug. He's harmless. He might be a little lazy, but he ain't hurting nobody, right? But that's how they do us, man. They make us monsters when we ain't really monsters, right? So if you want to scare me away from drugs, if you really want to show me some shit that's meant to keep me out of drugs, like show me something that's a real crime, some shit that really fucks up the world. You know what I mean? Like, this is Chaz. Chaz Insider Trades. Stealing homes from poor people on the New York Stock Exchange. Also, Chaz is high as fuck right now. He does a lot of cocaine in the bathroom at work. We would fire him, but, you know, his dad. You get it. Word. You guys were a lot of fun, man. My name's Langston Garman. Thank you for having me and being here.
Hey, thank you, DJ Exhibit, for the beat.
Langston Nelson for the logo and art.
Big up, WGN Radio. Shout out to our super producer, DJ Cash Era.
And boss man, Todd Manley.
Thank you, Dami.
And Marlena, the snack provider.
Shout out, Rena, the official photog in the corner store.
Stay up with us, Shy Corner Store, on Instagram, Twitter, and SoundCloud.
And please, y'all, please rate and subscribe on iTunes, Apple Music, SoundCloud, and wherever you listen to a podcast. Consider giving us those 5 stars.
And tell a friend.
And thank you for listening and rocking with us. We'll see you next week.